Welcome to the One Up Project.
Money is fuel that allows you to do things. It doesn't need to be taboo.
What you don't want to do is wake up at 65 realizing you did something you hated and have regret.
Go and find people who will give you advice for nothing.
This is a space for personal growth and money chat with new perspectives every Monday.
This bit of content, listening to this, is going to be a small little breadcrumb of something that makes them think a little bit differently.
For all the things we were never taught but should have been.
At the end of the day, the most important person is yourself, and if you're not happy with your own choices, then you're never going to be happy.
Kia ora everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the One Up Project podcast. This is a new and challenging style of episode for me, where I want to dissect a topic in the hopes of making it both easier to understand for others and to try and master that line of thought myself. I caught up with someone for coffee a couple of years ago now. It was really random, actually. They reached out to me on LinkedIn, wanted to connect, and it was great. We caught up at a cafe, had a coffee, spoke about our individual pursuits, and he was a really interesting character. He was trying to build meaningful solutions for issues within different parts of Africa. And he'd actually suggested that I read a book called The Prosperity Paradox. He had mentioned to me that it was a really great book and it helped him shape a lot of his perspectives on how to create meaningful solutions. But he thought that I would struggle to fully comprehend the book as a result of probably my privilege, but also my own lived experience. So I took that as a challenge, and here I am today to try and repeat back to you what I've learned in a way that will hopefully be helpful. And I think this episode will be a really meaningful, important one for me and for my work going forward, whether that's professionally within my career or personally with what I do with OneUp, because it is a topic close to my heart, which is how we are actually working on creating truly innovative solutions to contribute to a better world. You guys can tell me, was this helpful? Was it not? Was it easy to understand? Was it hard to understand? I want to know from your perspective what the case is, and make no assumptions that I will be able to communicate this effectively today, but we're definitely going to try my hardest. So I met with that person all from LinkedIn. LinkedIn's such a great tool, and there's going to be another episode released around this on kind of networking and personal brand if you're interested in how I've gone about doing that over the years. So as I said, the book is called The Prosperity Paradox: How Innovation Can Lift Nations Out of Poverty. And it is by three authors, Clayton M. Christensen, Ifosa Ojomo, and Karen Dillon. All great articulators, I think, of their ideas. And this book was written so well in a way where I could enter having done almost no work in this space, or really having thought about this space before, yet took so much from it. And I think there is a lot to be said in someone's ability to communicate ideas well. I listened to the audiobook, and I listened to it probably 2-ish years ago now. As we all know, there are too many problems in this world impacting the quality of life of other people, and I want to figure out how we can change that, how we can solve that in a way that does actually solve the problem. So I'm going to be coming at this topic from probably more of a critical lens, speaking to things like charities and the like, and how much they're actually contributing to change. So the book itself is revealing why so many investments in economic development fail to generate sustainable prosperity, and it offers some pretty groundbreaking solutions for actual lasting change. I find it really curious and a little bit frustrating at the amount of people who are actively working towards solving issues, yet how many problems we still face and how ineffective some of these solutions seem to be. It's not that they aren't helping, but it almost feels like progress isn't happening at times, and I'm sure many people can relate to that in many areas of work. So what is the equation to work this out is basically what I'm wondering and I'm curious about. I want you to kind of go on that journey with me, I suppose, and try and dissect this question I have as to how we can actually work towards solving these issues. And I also want to acknowledge the fact that I've just put a blanket over all the nuances of each of these situations that are very specific, and you can't really provide too much of a broad answer or explanation for some of society's most pressing issues. Sometimes I also wonder, maybe we need a bit of naivety, maybe we need a bit of blind exploration and a bit more of a broad explanation for people in order to actually identify the themes of a solution So once you have the overarching themes, then you can dig into the specifics. Once people actually understand the why of the problem or the why of what we're trying to do, that's when you can dig into the nuances and things become a little bit easier to understand. I think a great example proving this in many ways is investing. Because often I find the biggest barrier to people actually understanding money is how overcomplicated the experts and the knowledgeable people make the information. If you're just learning about investing for the first time, you don't really have to know about passive versus active investments. You don't really need to know about hedging. And you probably at first don't really need to know the definition of diversification, because just understanding the definition without the context actually is going to make no sense to you. Like, diversification is a concept in terms of diversing out the range of assets you invest into in order to make that a less risky, to have a less risky portfolio. That was a concept I didn't really understand until I actually started investing, until I actually understood what I wanted for my life. And I realized, oh, I don't actually want to take big risks and big gambles on one company here and one company there. I want to have a stable, diverse portfolio that grows over the long term. And then I realized, okay, that's what diversification is. So ultimately what I'm saying is that maybe it takes a little bit of naivety and a little bit of going against what might be seen as typically the right way in order to find these solutions. I think this in a lot of ways, as I said before, is a blanket statement and could be guided a lot by a privileged perspective of really not often needing to justify the nuances of my lived experience. And I absolutely have no doubt that I could be completely wrong about this. I guess the thing is, I'm not really interested in being right. I'm more interested in solving the problem. And this episode for me, and the way I like to use this podcast now, is more of a curious exploration of my own thoughts and my own feelings. And you're welcome to join that or not, but I hope that this comes across in a way that is productive more than it is offensive. So we'll have a little look-see into this book, and I'll explain some of the things that I thought would be really interesting as well. As I said, I looked around at the solutions we have in place, for example, charities, and I wonder how effective these solutions actually are. I interviewed the CEO of UNICEF Aotearoa end of last year, and she was an amazing woman, first of all. Loved her approach and her leadership. But I asked her a question about holding charities accountable to doing the work and actually making the change. I dug into this a lot more from a donation perspective, like how can we hold charities accountable to what we're donating to? How do we know that they're actually making a difference? And her explanation sort of sat more around being actively involved in the charity you're investing with and following up with them and looking into the ways that they're doing things, which I think leads to another interesting topic around when we donate, are we doing it to help other people, or are we doing it to feel better about ourselves? Because how many of us actually follow up with the charity afterwards and actually look at that journey of where the dollar is going, which the CEO of UNICEF Aotearoa mentioned was a very important part of their kind of business model, was that transparency. But something I wish I had have explored now, kind of after reading and analyzing this book, is that how do we know that charities, for example, and I don't mean to attack charities here, it's just using this as an example, how do we know that they're actually solving the issue and not just putting a band-aid on an issue? Or is that the purpose of a charity? Is that the purpose to go in and give the resources? Because that's a criticism that the book makes, is that often a lot of the solutions we see in this world are providing the resources and providing the support, and then that's it. So you've got the resources for that time, but then what happens after that when you need the resources again, and what was given isn't enough? I think a part of it as well, and something that this book alludes to, is it's people or solutions or businesses in this world aren't actually trying to understand the eclectic nature of forces that impact why a certain person, group, or community exist in the way that they do. I think the book Sapiens had a big impact on me in this way, because learning about history really helps you understand the why things are the way they are. And that can give you reasons as to how structures were created and why certain societies or groups might be marginalized more than others. And I think that when we're providing solutions, we need to think about this as well. Like, what is the history? What are all the different impacts that are that got us to this place? Not just we're in this place, how do we solve it? Because, for example, many developing or marginalized groups of people in the world today are in these situations because more developed and Western societies have advantage from exploiting them. And so that's a relevant topic to bring up when we're looking at solutions, not just about how we are feeding people who are hungry. We're actually looking into why does poverty exist, why does world hunger exist, and how are we solving it from its roots. And I think that's what true innovation looks like. And I'm really, really interested in finding those solutions that are truly innovative, which is what the book is talking about. So what are the themes that can allow for this change? And the book sort of goes into all the different things that can create these types of solutions. Like, what are we actually looking for? Entrepreneurship and empowering local people and communities is something that's so important to building a truly meaningful solution. When you allow and you empower a community to use their own expertise, their own experience to build the solution, it is the only way that you're going to be able to get an authentic understanding and view of what's going to work and, more importantly, what isn't going to work. And never to assume that environment with the understanding that you know anything at all. Always enter with a curious mindset and aim to find solutions, not to be right. I think this is how I try to approach life generally. And of course, we all have an ego, so it can be hard to do this at times, to go into a situation and not assume that you're right or that you know things. And when that ego is challenged or questioned, it can be quite confronting, possibly even offensive. And unless you're the type of person that is conscious of what is happening in your mind, it can be quite hard to get around. So I think that staying curious is always going to be a theme that is important when looking to contribute to a better world. The next part is a concept that I have gone back to time and time and time and time and time again when I've spoken to businesses about how they are speaking to the right audience, how their effective their messaging is. This is a really important part of that. And it's pushing versus pulling solutions. A pulling solution involves responding directly to the needs and the demands of that market and of those consumers. That society or that group of people is pulling that solution in as a result of their own needs rather than someone pushing it, which we'll get to in a second, on them. Those who are driven by a pulling approach are driven by market demand and customer feedback. They're really listening, they're really empathizing, they're really understanding who it is they're trying to solve for. I suppose how I like to think about it is a pulling solution is when that community is pulling it in because they know they need it, that they are making the choice, they have the control, they're pulling the solution in. On the other hand, a pushing solution, which is more often than not what we're seeing in our world, is when people, often external groups to the group that actually needs the help, are pushing their aid or their support or their ideas or their businesses onto that group of people. And so it's almost as if the group of people that need it didn't get a choice, or they don't have much control or certainty over that solution either, because it's being pushed on them. Although that these pushing solutions might actually address the issue to some degree, they might provide immediate, maybe even temporary relief, they might not always lead to a sustainable change, a stable change, a change that actually lasts over time, that is helpful for people ongoing. Ultimately, that's not really going to help many people, because you're bringing in a solution for a time, and that time is finite. It's not infinite. It's not an infinite solution. And if you've read The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek, you'll know what I'm referring to there, another great book. But essentially, an infinite solution is one that continues on and kind of never has an end goal. So it's a constant pursuit over time. And I think when we're bringing solutions into places where people need them, we need to think about how that is outlasting not only that time and place, but it's outlasting the people who are there right now and going for generations. So again, to overview of that, pulling versus pushing solutions. A pulling solution is when someone is pulling in that solution for themselves. They have the control. A pushing solution is when the external forces or people are pushing that solution onto the group. Too often we're seeing mostly those that have never had experience, lived experience with the issue they're dealing with. We see them pushing their solutions onto a community. And I never really noticed the difference of this before, because I probably existed in a group that was on the side of the pushing, and of no fault of anyone's we believe that we're helping, right? Because if we're donating to a charity or we are contributing in some way, that is a good thing. And I don't disagree with that. I think it is a good thing. And I don't think anything is wholly bad or wholly good. It's not 100% right or wrong. There's context and there's nuance to all of these things. This is more like taking a critical view, critical lens on what we're doing, and maybe that could help spark an idea in someone else's mind for the solution they're creating or the business they're creating. So how do we create more pulling solutions and less pushing solutions? Pulling solutions are often market creating innovations. Market creating innovations is going to be the key concept here that we talk about. And market creating innovations create opportunities and transform industries by making products or services more accessible, affordable, convenient. We're going to go over all the different things that create an actual market creating innovation. But by the name, you can already tell that this isn't just about creating a solution to the problem, a product or a service. It's about creating something that builds a whole almost industry of itself. So we're not just solving the problem, we're creating jobs, we're creating economic prosperity. There's so much around that. It's not just a 2D view of the issue itself. We're not just giving someone something like a resource and assuming this is going to solve the problem. We're creating a market that can make the resource accessible. What is the difference here? I was thinking about how to explain this in a way that would be easy for me to remember and hopefully easy for other people to understand too. Have you heard the saying? I'm sure we all have heard the saying, but if you've heard the saying, give a man a fish and he will eat for a day, teach a man to fish and he will eat for a lifetime. That is a very popular saying in a Western context, especially, where basically you can give someone the answer and sure, it'll solve their problem, but only for that time. Whereas if you give them the support and the resource to do that thing for themselves, if you teach them how to access that support, they will have that knowledge for a lifetime. So in the context of a market creating solution, we might change that quote to give a community food and they will eat until it runs out. Create an affordable marketplace for food in a community and they will have food, jobs, and means to build resources for themselves and future generations. Obviously not as catchy, but it takes into account some of the nuances of those situations. It's still broad, but it speaks a little bit more specifically, and it's less individualistic because we're not just talking about solving the problem for one person, we're talking about solving the problem for an entire group of people. And that's another important part of what creates an effective solution here, is that it's scalable. And we're considering the fact that it's scalable and it can grow over time. I'm also quite aware that no one can respond right now. So if you do have any comments or thoughts or opinions or criticisms, feel free to jump on Instagram and go to The One Up Project and message me your thoughts, and I'd be more than happy to have that conversation. I honestly love that so much. So if you are wanting to have that conversation, please just let me know. I don't care if you agree, disagree, whatever. The key here is curiosity. What are the components of a market creating solution? I think it might help me to think about the fact that the visual impacts of suffering that we can see in our everyday, well, some of us luckily not in our everyday lives, but things like hunger or corruption, the impacts of corruption, they aren't actually the cause. They are just a side effect of the cause. So we're trying to drive economic development, which will, as a result, eradicate hunger or corruption. So these are just side effects of the main issue. A market creating solution is supposed to attack the core. So we can start there. Understanding the actual challenges, the constraints, the aspirations of, in air quotes, potential customers, the people who might be struggling, particularly those who have been excluded or maybe overlooked by existing products or services. There are many marginalized groups of people that we could look to in order to gain more empathy. And it's also very important that the perspective we're taking is from the lens of that experience, not through the lens of our own. So it's not a perception of their experience, it's their experience. So in this situation, there is no accusing someone of being wrong or not understanding, because that is their experience as they see it, and we need to accept it as that, I think. A market creating solution is also affordable. So making the products or services accessible to a broader population, including those with limited purchasing power, This is often going to involve innovations in the entire structure of how things are created. So in the cost structure, supply chains, production, whatever it is. It's not just about the what, it's about everything that sits around it, the how, the why. It's all very important. And so how are you making that thing affordable? And we also want to do this without exploiting groups of people even more, right? So to make something cheaper by, you know, paying people less than what we should, is not solving any issue. It's continuing to exploit people. So trying to find ways in which at all levels this thing is affordable. Access is next. I think I use the word accessibility maybe 80,000 times a week, but they access is such an important thing, obviously. And this is overcoming barriers like physical, geographical barriers where people actually are, logistical, infrastructural. Most of these things will be disruptive, I suppose, right? So there'll be a lot of barriers to access, and figuring out a way that that is possible is going to be a key in doing that. And then this next one is sort of in the space that I would like to move into in some ways, and I find really, really interesting, which is user experience design and simplicity. So when you're creating these things, if it's a service or if it's a product, how are you building it with the audience in mind in terms of how they're actually going to use it, understanding the fact that there will be certain restrictions, maybe financial, maybe literacy, whatever, that stop people from being able to use the typical solutions of this world. So how you design something is really important. And you could see some themes coming through here, empathy being probably the most important one, because that's viewing the it's viewing the solution from someone's true and authentic perspective, not your own. Again, they need to be scalable. So I mentioned this before, a market creating solution is implemented knowing that it needs to reach a lot of people. It's not just about how we're reaching the individual. This is how we're reaching big groups of people, not necessarily fast, but effectively, I think. And then sustainability. So this is both in terms of its long-term lasting impact, and how it's continuing to contribute, but also in its environmental impact and making sure that we're, you know, by contributing to climate justice, you're also contributing to all of the other layers of societal and systemic problems that the world may face in so many other ways as well. And the last one is empowerment and inclusion. Something that I think is key, or have seen to be key in a lot of individual people's journeys for growing and developing themselves, is instilling a sense of self-belief. And I know it can sometimes be a little bit ignorant maybe to talk about motivations and mindset when there's so many practical barriers to a lot of these issues, but I do think that empowerment is a huge part of this, and actually creating a space, creating a solution where people believe that something better is possible. You can't work towards a better world that you can't imagine, if that makes sense. We need to be able to imagine it first. And so empowering other people to do that is really important. It's really my dream to work on something like this. And this book, I don't think I've realized how important it will be in what I want to do. And hopefully this is all making sense so far. I want to share an example, a real life example of this that we all typically use as well. And that is Uber. Uber, or ride sharing apps, let's say, are a market creating solution. Because, and we've all had this conversation, so it's just amazing. I never thought about it. But before there was Uber, or whatever the ride sharing app in your area is, getting a taxi, like, I would never get a taxi, to be fair. I think I started needing Ubers when Uber existed, but I was never getting taxis before. And I feel like no one, like, my parents weren't ordering taxis. Taxis weren't really a thing unless it was going to the airport and pre-ordered. It was never as accessible, it seemed, or as normal to get a taxi to places. But when Uber was around, it was like, oh, we'll just get an Uber. Like, ride sharing and being able to get a ride off someone seemed so much more accessible. And anyway, that was a ramble. But basically, before there was Uber, getting taxis was really expensive and it was inconsistent because you kind of had to agree that they'd show up at your address at this time and you couldn't really like speak directly to the driver. There was limited availability. There was no kind of certainty over what you were paying. You're always looking at the meter, like how much money is this going to cost me? There was a lot of factors of that experience that didn't make someone feel good about the experience. And then I think limited a lot of people's access to being able to do that. You also couldn't do it through your phone. You had to call them and then, you know, organize it that way. It wasn't as easy. Then when Uber came around, suddenly you're on your mobile phone, you're ordering your Uber, you got a discount for your first Uber, so it's half off, so it's like $5 to go somewhere. And you can see where the driver is, you can see how far away they are, you have full certainty, full control over the entire experience, it's accessible, it's affordable, it's easy to understand, the app has a great user experience. I mean, I'm sure we've all had like issues with it, but for the most part, it's great. It's provided convenience. There's also a lot more safety and security in catching an Uber or ride sharing now because you know who your driver is. You can share those details with anyone in your life. The app has a record of it if anything was to go wrong. Like, there's so much more accountability to the driver as well. And I think the entire experience has just been revolutionized completely. As a result, there's an entirely new market for people to become involved with. Most Uber drivers that you deal with now, you talk to them about what they do for work and this is their side hustle. This is just something they picked up on the side. They're a contractor, like driving cars isn't their full-time gig for a lot of people. So it becomes accessible for others too to join that line of work. And there's a lot more competition for taxis. So it's all just created not only more access for someone to get transport, but it's actually created a whole lot more opportunity for people to earn an income, for people to join a different industry. And that is actually pretty revolutionary when you think about it. And I just cannot believe that I've never thought about that before. If you can think of any others, I would love to know, because I think that these are all great examples and something we can take so much from as well. And I know there will be other examples of typical industries that have been disrupted. Possibly I want to jump to Netflix and say maybe that's one too, but I haven't thought about that enough in my head in terms of going from having to go into the video store to having it online, and maybe different jobs are created as a result of that. But I think that the ride sharing app is a great solution because now it's not just Uber, right? It's like Lyft, it's Didi, it's, if you're in Bali, it's Gojek or it's Grab. So there's so many different ones that are around now as well. So what's the next market creating solution? Well, I kind of wanted to plug myself here and say that I'm currently working on something that I think has the potential to be a market creating solution, and I'm going to try my absolute hardest to make sure it leans that way for sure, because I think those are the solutions that will, yes, change the world, but also just contribute effectively to a more equitable world, which is what I want to see, and actually looking to the root of issues. Funnily enough, the timing of wanting to go over this book was really convenient because the author has actually written another book called The Innovator's Dilemma, which Stephen Bartlett, I went to the Diary of a CEO tour show last week, and he spoke about one of his favorite books, which is also one of Steve Jobs' favorite books, The Innovator's Dilemma, which is written by the same author. But randomly, I heard about this book in a completely different context, and I wouldn't have thought it was really business related at all. I thought it was more like social, from like a social perspective. I've taken so much from that book, and I hope that this was a good overview of the importance of market creating solutions, and I can't wait to update you on what I've been working on and hopefully contribute to something that is as important as some of these other things have been. Would recommend checking out this book if you'd like to, and let me know if you have any questions or you want to discuss it further. I'd really, really be interested in having that conversation with you, but otherwise, I appreciate you listening and look forward to the next episode. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The One Up Project. If you want to find more stuff just like this, check out our other apps or follow us at The One Up Project on Instagram or TikTok. See you there.